Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. We have another great show in store for you today. At the top of the next hour, we will have a special guest, Justin Moore, and he will be bringing us some very, very good music. But before then, let's take a look at what's on tap. Voting right issues in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. MLK, have we reduced him to just a man with a dream? We also take a look at the NAACP Awards with the Justin Timberlake and Robin Thicke new debacle that's coming out. And also, is Hollywood having a blackout? And we take a look at much, much more. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises. You can follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJema. That is AskJema. Now, I introduce the some and present the others, no other than Jema Hill Cook. Jema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Awesome. First up, the voting rights issues in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. But before we do that, I would like to talk a little bit about the ruling. Actually, I want to mention the lawmakers on both sides of the aisle introduced legislation last week that would revisit the protections of the Voting Rights Act that were struck down by the Supreme Court last year. Now, Casey Hunt, Carrie Dan of NBC News reported the legislation will rewrite the formula that decides which localities and states must get federal approval before changing their voting laws. The piece of the law that the court struck down as unconstitutional, leaving it essentially toothless. So, Jema, I guess first up, and before we you know, get started on Pennsylvania. I want to ask you, what do you think about this new provision or the law that the Democrats and Republicans are putting together to try to plug in the holes that that the Supreme Court struck down with the voting rights last year.
Right, to plug up the holes that the Supreme Court dug in the historical act itself. Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. It doesn't totally fill it all, but it does more than what it was doing initially. And so because of that, and whenever you can have the two sides agree and come up with a bill, you know, we're in such a dire strait and no sort of respect right now for our Congress in terms of writing any sorts of laws that have made sense in the last 3 years. For them to come up with this is admirable, to say the least, because it's their Republican state houses across the country that are actually making it more difficult for people to vote as opposed to easier, or not necessarily easier. It's not about it being easy. It's about it being accessible. And so when those in Congress in the Washington area can actually work with and across the aisle there between Democrats and Republicans to come up with something that would restore that accessibility, I think is a great process. I'm happy that they were able to do that.
Okay, so let's take a listen to what John Lewis had to say. He came out the other day, a couple of days ago, and said this.
It is amazing to me. It is unbelievable. It is almost unreal that we were able to come together so quickly to craft a compromise that both Democrats and Republicans can find a way to support and move forward. Each side had a little to give up, a little to come up with the solution. I will admit that it's not a perfect bill, but it is a necessary and good beginning. We had to do what we could to respond to the United States Supreme Court decision made only a few months ago. The swift action we took on this issue demonstrates the importance of the right to vote to members on both sides of the aisle. As I've said many times, the right to vote is precious, almost sacred. It is the most powerful nonviolent tool we have in a democratic society. So as Mr. Cunha said, it is fitting that in the spirit of bipartisanship, we introduce this measure around the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And I want to thank each one of you. I really want to thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for your hard and good work. And again, thank all of the staff people. You didn't have to do it, but you did it. Thank you.
Okay. So obviously he was showing a lot of gratitude there at the end regarding the measure that was put forward. But my question is to you, whenever I hear the term or either language of we didn't get everything that we want and they didn't get everything that they want, it concerns me. Do you think that there's some cause for concern regarding this new legislation being brought forth?
That what the Supreme Court did was, as they say, basically gutted it and made it toothless in terms of any sort of enforceability, allowed states to come up with and to do whatever they want to do, which is why you had so many states, the great state of Texas being one of them, and their attorney generals pushing for these new voter ID laws and things that we stated throughout the year of last year that was making it more difficult for people to vote as opposed to making it more accessible. So what the federal law does, I don't think it takes that power back away from the states, or that the states now have to still seek permission and or approval prior to changing anything. But it takes away the ability for states to just outright deny people that right and that access. So I agree. When I hear those words, we didn't, you know, both sides had to compromise and We had to give a little. I just don't know what you had to compromise on either side. I mean,
that's my point.
Right. You would think people would want people to have access to the ballot box, since, you know, we are a nation of, you know, democracy. So for that not to happen, it doesn't make sense to me that we had to give up something or not get everything we wanted. It's kind of ludicrous, but, you know, we'll see what it all says at the end.
Yeah, you know, we definitely won't let this rest. So speaking of, it's a right for everyone really voting. I'm glad to see, and this is what we were talking about earlier, I'm glad to see that the judge struck down the voter ID law a couple of days ago. And so there's an article in The Root, and it says, in a victory for the opponents of Pennsylvania's voter ID law, a state judge spiked the requirement that mandated all Pennsylvanians must show photo identification before casting their ballots. The Commonwealth Court Judge Bernard McGinley, who is a Democrat, said that the law would place an exorbitant burden on the people's right to vote, and said that the state had not been able to explain why such a law was necessary in the first place. Voting laws are designed to assure a free and fair election. The voter ID law does not further this goal, McGinley wrote in his ruling. So, Jima, two questions. Is this a step forward for the state of Pennsylvania? And do you think the impact of this new legislation has kind of had any bearing on the judge's decision?
Well, no, I don't think the new bill that still has to go before the two chambers to even be voted on. So it's just something that they've crafted now and that they agree on the language of, so now they can go present it before the House and the Senate. But I don't think the judge's ruling has any, you know, that the act that they put together, the bill they put together, had any impact on his ruling, primarily because of what you just read there, and that the law itself did not do anything to further people's access to the ballot box. And so I think what this will have an impact on is other states across the country that rush to implement laws in their state based on the ruling from the Supreme Court, not recognizing the backlash that they were going to get and how many people were going to be affected by it. And that the claim was that it was about voter fraud and protecting people's right to vote, when in reality it's about restricting people's right to vote. And several people are now realizing that and are seeing it for what it was, which is all about restriction, not gaining access to and or protecting. So I think what happened in Pennsylvania will have a greater impact on other states as we go along this process, in terms of other states and federal districts taking a look at what's happening here in Texas and down south and all the places that enacted these crazy voter ID laws
ID
restrictions. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Texas, because Texas is always kind of lead the way in these restrictive measures. Because it obviously has been a red state for a number of years, and it's starting to Democrats are starting to gain some ground here. But do you think the state of Texas will necessarily pull back the reins on their restrictions for with respect to voters?
I hope so. I'm thinking the same thing that happened in Pennsylvania and North Carolina will probably happen here in Texas. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember for sure. But if my memory serves me correct, I think there's already been a filing against it. So it's probably just a matter of time before it too is heard in the federal court and a decision is made, as well as to whether or not it violates someone's constitutional right and or it does not meet the need that it claimed it was going to meet. So I think Texas would probably be another one that will that partial of it would probably be struck down. I really do believe that.
You know, I could see the motive when President Obama was running the first time and again the second time. I could see the motive for the changes in with respect to how elections are funded. But I'm not sure why a Republican, because that's who mainly is driving this change of the voter ID laws, why they would need any justification in the future, right? I mean, it was obvious a tactic, you know, to try to restrict, you know, the votes for, you know, minorities, votes for disabled people, restrict votes for the elderly. And so when you look at the landscape, In the last couple of elections, yeah, it makes sense. But moving forward, why would they continue to push this issue? And when the actual landscape is wide open now for anybody to be president in the next election?
Well, as you say often, Patrick, and we say often on this show, our politics are local. So, and if people really start paying attention to that, then they're going to start showing up a little bit more voting in these state elections where that's where all these state laws is coming from, is from your state offices. And so if people start listening and being like, well, wait a minute, I need to vote just like I vote in the national election, I need to be doing the same thing for my state representative and my state senator, because they're the ones that's at the Capitol making laws that are really impacting me on a day-to-day basis. So if they can restrict you from voting, then you won't be able to vote in any election, whether it's the national one or your local one. So that's why, you know, that's their motivation, is to stay so they can stay in charge where they are and or discourage people from running against them, because you mentioned the whole money aspect of it, discourage, you know, people who could probably go in and make a greater difference from even considering a life of service in terms of politics, because of how much money one has to have in order to do that. So there's always a method to their madness. There's never just a, you know, nothing that they do is by happenstance. And most of the time, you know, it might look like it's a reaction to something, but I don't necessarily know if it's all reactionary. I think this, as I stated, it may have started out being about President Obama in 08 and 09, and then they spun the web for 2010. They got in 2010, and all these things have been happening since they've been in power. So it really doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this is a problem, but for some reason people have selective recall and selective memory, and they don't always remember what just happened one election cycle ago. And so we have to be the ones continuing to carry the message about, yeah, you know, it might look like it has something to do with national, but it really has more to do with, you know, what's going on in your state houses and state government.
Yep, that's a good point. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about MLK. You know, we got the holiday coming up, and but we want to know, have we reduced him to just a man with a dream? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Well, a Houston father is facing 180 days.
You are listening to Kind of Friends with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Coast friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I want to shift now for a moment to Martin Luther King Jr.'s, especially the celebration. And before we get started, Jima, let me get your perspective on the Martin Luther King celebration in general, and then and Martin Luther King, what he stood for. Have we made any step forward since his death?
Okay, now that's a loaded question, and I have to do my own personal plug here in terms of one of my all-time favorite books about the life of Dr. King, which I probably say every year we've been on the radio. But for those that have not read it yet, April 4th, 1968, written by Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, is, I think, one of the best books written, in my opinion, about the life of Reverend King as it relates to his death and how it changed America. So having said that, April 4th, 1968, I was still in my mother's womb at that time, so I wasn't born yet. However, I have reaped the benefits of his life because of his death and because of what he stood for. We have attained a lot, but we have not realized, in my opinion, the fullness of his dream, because poverty is still what it is. America is still who she is. She has yet, in my opinion, to clear the check that she wrote. It's still coming back saying insufficient. So because of that, in my opinion, we have much work left to do from our point as in our own community and Black community. And then on a larger scale, in the mind of America as a whole, because there are too many instances in America where people of color, specifically people who were brought here in chains physically, and although freed, was never free from the lingering effects of what the chains did. So the chains may have not been there physically, but we were left in so much bondage emotionally and mentally that we were still in bondage and bound up. So because things were separate and unequal for so long, we're just now in this administration really taking a hard look at the things that have kept us divided, i.e. the disproportionate number of minorities that are incarcerated. That didn't just happen in this administration, it's been going on for forever, there has been a disproportionate number of blacks and Hispanics being incarcerated for years. And that's why there's such a high number of them that can't get jobs, can't go to certain places, can't live in certain places, because it has a domino effect. Your time, you may have served your time, but the label is still there with you, so you're still locked up, basically. So when you look at it from that perspective, when you look at the education system, our educational system, our public school system, and how we somewhere decided that charter schools or private schools were better than public schools, and so we didn't keep up. They became separate and unequal. We still have public schools, but they don't have the same technological advances as some of your charter schools or some of your private schools. And so because of that, and we've always had private schools. Catholic schools were private schools, you know. So it wasn't like this is some new phenomenon as well that we just, you know, all of a sudden we got all these private schools. We've always had them, and we've always had, you know, probably charter schools, but because we had schools at churches, you know, there's always been at least one church in the community that had a school. So that's always been there, but your public school was never pushed aside or made to feel less than like it is now. So when you start adding up all the things that Reverend King was fighting for up until his death, taking a look at poverty and the Poor People's March is what took him to Memphis. When you take a look at that and you look at the fact that here we are, supposedly the richest country in the world, and we have such high rates of poverty, and you look at the fact that you have people sitting in elected positions that don't value those lives because they don't think they're worth anything. So the life of the poor doesn't have a voice. And so who is talking for the poor now? Who gets to champion that? And so when you look at his life and his totality and what he meant, he challenged the system in more ways than one. He just didn't do sit-ins. He agitated the system. He made the system angry, which is why they followed him and wiretapped him and said all these manners afraid of him, afraid of what he could become and how he could convince not only a race of people, but a nation, that she was wrong. And so because of that, they so much was left undone because he was taken away too soon. And we've spent the last almost 46 years trying to find another one. When we don't need another one, we just need somebody to pick up where he left off and keep it moving. And so, you know, that hasn't happened. So there's so much that's still left to do. There's so much work to do. So our system is still broken. Our educational system is still broken. The wealth gap between the have and the have-nots has increased. Oh, my goodness. I can't even tell you how wide that is now. We have more people of color incarcerated now at larger rates for longer sentences than their white counterparts, and we talked even about that. You know, last week as related to the school suspensions, the differences in that. So we have differences in school suspensions. You know, we have differences in sentencing as it relates to a law that may have been broken. So, you know, Dr. King would have a lot to say about where we are right now.
Okay, so is it cynical for me to say then that the dream was just that, a dream, right? Just like the American dream. In a lot of instances, or not any way, shape, or form, a reality. And so, you know, when he talks about the dream, especially during the speech, I'm not going to even call it the I Have a Dream speech, because that's not what he was really meant to talk about. It's really the commercialization of his speech. But the components in his speech that talked about the dream, It, you know, to me, is just that. It's a dream. I'm not real sure if there's going to be ever a day in our American society that will become a reality. And I say that in the context of what you just mentioned about our education system, our prison system, and, you know, our economic system, especially with respect to how minorities are getting a piece of the pie. And I look at it in a broader context when you look at how in society, you know, generationally, you know, people improve from generation to the next, right? A is B is better off than A, and C is better off than B, and D is better off than C, and it goes on and on and on. But now we're starting to take a descent with respect to wealth, with respect to education, with respect to just in general on how our society is now being worse off than their ancestors, or at least their previous generation. So, you know, and then we're on a pathway that's even getting even worse. So I'm not real sure if the manifestation of his dream will ever come to fruition. What do you think?
Well, I agree because, no, I don't think you're being cynical about it even being a dream because the song has been a nightmare. But I think what you say is valid in that. One of the first things you do on a road to recovery is you admit you have a problem, right? America has yet to admit she has a problem with race. And until she admits that and that there is real attempt to make good on it and to do right by it, then we won't ever get there because there will always be enough to say, oh, it's not that bad. But if we never say we do have a race problem and it doesn't come after an event. See, we admit that we got some racial issues after something happened, after Trayvon Martin, after all the things, the ugliness that was happening with the president before he was elected during that first primary season with the Sarah Palins of the world and all those people. We'll say something around an event, but just right now we haven't had anything major happen, and I'm using air quotes here in terms of what I mean by major. And so now is the time to really have the conversation when it's not attached to anything and it's not emotional. You know, if we could have it when it's not attached to an event where we could really get to the bare bones of it. If America was to really, and I know Clinton, I believe he did, I don't think he did it when he was in office, probably was later, but I believe he did apologize, I think, to African Americans for slavery, right? Now, the reason why that needs to happen, I feel, not just in words, but in deed. You need to make good on what you said you were going to do. So since we never got the 40 acres, what can you give me now? And herein is the problem, because we won't agree on what that is. We won't agree on how to receive quote unquote reparations. Although the smartest thing would be the investment in education. From Head Start on through, that would be the smartest thing because we all would benefit from that. And so because we have not truly said, I have a problem, and you know you have a problem, when you go to therapy or to some sort of program because somebody else tells you to go, you never really get out of it what you should, because you're not there because you think you should be there. You're there because somebody else wants you to go, or somebody told you if you don't go, then I ain't going to be here no more. But the moment America says to herself, I have a problem with race, and I have never treated the descendants of slavery with respect, I have never accepted the fact that slavery continues to have an impact on the lives of people, that slavery had an impact on families for African Americans, that the systems we put in place after slavery, Jim Crow and making it difficult for men to be in the house, for a woman to receive assistance. Until I make good on that, until I say all those things out loud and hear myself say those things out loud, we're just talking about it.
So, but why is it necessary, though, for the government to take that position? Why couldn't it be the case, or why shouldn't it be the case that the community of interest, whether it be any minority community of interest, be the ones that take it upon themselves to do those things you just mentioned. For example, education. The government is providing the vehicle for free education. The question then becomes, why are people not taking advantage of it? So what would be different, in your estimation, than the government saying, here, go get this education, as opposed to, as an individual, we saying ourselves, or a minority themselves, or the community of interest, saying themselves, go get this education? Why does it necessarily have to be from one person than the other?
No, I don't necessarily think it has to be, but I think because the issues we're dealing with are systemic, the issues that we're dealing with in America are systemic issues, and by that I mean that they're connected to a whole lot of different little things. So if we don't fix the root cause of the issue, then it's just like when you go to the doctor and you say your toe hurts or your knee or your back hurts, right? And then they give you some medicine for the back pain, but they don't ever tell you why your back is hurting. So you go back to the doctor and you still have a backache. And you go back to the doctor and then they give you another prescription that's stronger than the one you had before. The pain is subsided, but you still don't know why your back is hurting. So you have to, until you go to a back specialist, to get to the root cause of what's causing a back problem, then you're just going to be taking medicine for the sake of taking medicine. It's the same thing with the systemic issues around race. There's so many issues around that. And so
let me dissent for a minute. I'm going to say the problem is masked by race, and I'm going to say that race is the smokescreen. The real problem is economics. And if we get to the bottom line being the dollar bill as opposed to the race, I think we'll be able to take major steps forward. Because if you fix the economic problem, you can begin to do those other things and heal, right? But because we're having so many problems with the dollar bill, I think it's really masked by race. And I look at that, as long as the king, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was talking about race and civil rights, he was allowed to move in a particular box. But as soon as he started talking about economics, he disappears. And so I offer that opinion because of all the wonderful things he was able to accomplish with civil rights. But as soon as he's talking about in the good old dollar bill, they he was assassinated. And so we begin to keep looking at race. Yeah, they'll continue to allow us to have that discussion. They'll continue to allow people to talk about it and get mad about it and put it in a more emotional context. But the reality is, you know, the Poor People's Campaign is way more important than race. What do you say?
I think they're just as. I don't think it's either or. I think it's and. I think you combine the two. I think race gets you to the table, and once you start peeling back the layers of race, then you do see it's about economics. But if you never talk about race, you dad sure ain't going to talk about economics. So you got to talk about something that everybody can see. Everybody can see the race. We don't always see the dollar part of it because we view that dollar differently from community to community. Across the board, the dollar is seen, you know, we look at it in different aspects. But when you combine the two and you look at how things have been kept divided and separated along those two lines, and I agree with you that when Reverend King started talking about that part of the struggle, the economic part of the struggle, then things got a little dicey, you know. White America was not comfortable with that part of it because then it would have forced them to admit to some other ills that had happened that they had yet to wanted to even admit had happened. So I agree with you on that it is, at the end of the day, I agree. It does come down to economics. You're not dissenting too far from me.
That's good, because I
have to talk about the race part. And when you go back to Dr. King,
I agree.
But wait, though. But when you and so my other challenge to people, if you don't want to read Dr. Michael Eric Dyson's book, I think another thing people need to read is the letter that King wrote from the Birmingham jail back in April of 1963, exactly 5 years before he was assassinated. to go back to that letter, it gives you a blueprint. It talks a lot about, you know, what he was dealing with, even coming to Birmingham, doing what he was asked to do by people that didn't even want him to come there. And then even the things he talked about where they were saying, you need to wait, you know. And then somebody's always telling somebody to wait. It's not the right time. You need to wait till this dies down or let the fire calm down before you bring that back up again. And so that's easy for you to say when you haven't been affected by what's going on. You can tell somebody to go wait. But when I was sitting right here in the middle of the fire, I need some water. So I need somebody to pay attention that I'm on fire right now. And so I challenge people to go and read that letter that he did from the Birmingham jail. It will open your mind tremendously about the type of man that he was in terms of his vision, and that he just wasn't some old, let's just join hands and march. You know, there was a purpose to the marchation. The agitation was real. It wasn't just because he didn't have nothing to do that day. It was real in terms of bucking the system. And if there is never somebody in the room that sits around and says, I don't think that's a good idea, we will continue to do the same thing the same old way. And what good is that going to do?
I agree. And that's why when we talk about, at least me, and on the show, and when we have a conversation about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., for me, I'm going to start mentioning the Poor People's Campaign every single time. I'm not going to just talk about the I Have a Dream, because people, they have all kind of different connotations with dreams, and they have these metaphors, and they do all these things with dreams, and they continue to, you know, to make fun of it in a lot of ways. And I'm saying, you know, the real core of what he wanted to do before he moved on, it was really the Poor People's Campaign. And if for people that don't know, the Poor People's Campaign was a 1968 effort to gain economic justice for poor people. And I want to unpack this word, economic justice for poor people. And this doesn't necessarily mean reparations if that's not what if that doesn't resonate with you, because a lot of people think, oh, they just want something for free. Well, when in reality is, I mean, this country was built on the backs of slaves, and the fact that, you know, they should get something for it. And in fact, it was even promised to them. So when you talk about economic justice, that's one aspect of it, but there's others as well. I mean, we're having a fight about the minimum wage right now. You know, there was a great interview on the Colbert Show the other day where this young lady talked about having just to get, you know, get a raise like a dollar or so an hour, $1.50 an hour. I mean, why is that so difficult when you have CEOs making, you know, 100 or 500 times their average worker? I mean, so that's greedy. You know, so when we really mention Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., we cannot forget the fact that, you know, the Poor People's Campaign was just as significant as the I Have a Dream speech and all the other things that we mentioned when we mentioned his name.
That's true, because as you stated, it was during that period that's when, you know, he was assassinated, was during that time when he went there to strike to Memphis, when he went there to strike with the sanitation workers. The first time, and had to, you know, leave because of the insistence of the government to pay people to create a thing that wasn't part of his plan. And so because of that, then he became an outsider, and they said he brought the violence, and you're talking about a man who would not bring violence. And so they paid people to agitate the situation and to cause problems, but yet he went back. Because the job wasn't done, and he didn't feel as though it had served a purpose. And so you're right. Once he started speaking about and speaking out about the inequities and from the economic standpoint, then yeah, it got real serious. Whereas, you know, they for lack of a better word, they had to take him out because they didn't want to deal with that. So
yeah, I want to talk a little bit about
and they still don't.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about this notion you said that you want people to know who he was in all his glory, not just, you know, the peaceful, nonviolent side. But there was a lot of things, and you mentioned the Birmingham jail. But I also want to say, before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about the fact that the reason why I think that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has been kind of not necessarily marginalized, but has not come to the forefront as much, is because people has really they really believe that we've arrived. And what I mean by that is that the fact that there's a tangible component next to civil rights and voting voters' rights, and that's the President of the United States, Barack Obama. And so when they see that tangible thing that voting rights was passed and we had the right to vote and we have equal rights and we have equal opportunity and we have a black president, that tangible extension of Martin Luther King, people think that's complete. And so we don't begin to talk about, yeah, that was part one, but part two was economics. And we now start to explore this major component that would really change the dynamics of, you know, just Americans and minorities in America. In a vast ways. And so we must begin to raise the conversation beyond civil rights into more economics and to attach it to Martin Luther King, because we have this platform every year to talk about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We have this platform to talk about what he meant to our society and his legacy. And we can now begin to introduce more about the Poor People's Campaign and all the things he was doing around economic justice, because people's extension of his civil rights is the president. And they will always hold that as his extension of civil rights. And people have used this term, you know, for lack of a better word, that we've arrived with respect to, you know, equal rights in America. And, you know, and people can argue both sides of that, right? And, you know, I'm on the opposing view of that. But at any rate, there's an argument can be made for it, right? We do have an African-American president, and he had to be voted in by a majority of Americans. So in the majority of the Americans, you know, by definition, is not black people. And so we have to have some acceptance of the fact that, you know, civil rights has taken a major step forward, because we do have that, and President Obama is a tangible extension of that.
Right, but my pushback on that is, and maybe I've missed this part in my study, but I don't think Reverend King missed a message or even desire was that we have a black president.
I agree, but civil rights equal rights for all people was really his platform. And so what I'm saying is the tangible asset to that, civil rights being race and equality, when you look at that, people equate that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what they make a correlation between the presidency being black and what Martin Luther King doing for equal rights in America. So what I'm saying is, you cannot make that extension when it comes to economics.
Right, and I think that's why we get so, you know, that's why some people want to get so upset at the president, and some people want to talk about America being post-racial, because they equate the two, and I don't think they go together.
I think
you can have them at the same meal, but I don't necessarily know if they go together. One may be an appetizer. What might be your side dish, but I don't necessarily know if they go together. And so when I think about when you say racial equality, the equalness of it, and the economic equality, that still hasn't happened yet. We can't say that we've reached a part of the dream when we just talk about the numbers that we talk about, with the number of people that are disproportionately incarcerated. We can't talk about that when we talk about the number of people, the gap between the rich and the poor. There's no way we can say anything about equal. There's no way. When we look at our test scores and we look at the differences and even gender issues, the pay of people, you know, women still don't make the same as men and in some areas. And so we can't talk about we've reached anything, because we really haven't.
I'm in agreement with you.
We've climbed the ladder, you know. We've made some strides, but I don't believe we have done enough to level the playing field. I really, honestly, I don't believe that. And I'm not trying to be a pessimist here, but when you start really looking at what we have accomplished, and you start looking at what's left to accomplish, you're still climbing the mountain. And so, you know, you can look back and say, whew, I've come a long way, or you can look up and say, I got a long way to go. Either way, you still got something to do. because if you stay where you are, you're not going to get to the top, right? So I can say I can sit on this part and be like, "Ooh, boy, I've come a long way," and just stay right there. But if my goal was to get to the top of the mountain, I've got to keep moving. But if all I wanted was a black president, then I'm done.
Yeah, but
all I wanted was
again,
access.
I think if you look at just the majority of views in America, right? You have a well-learned, well-educated position on this issue, but the majority of the views are not that. And the majority of the views talk about equality when they should be talking about equity, which are two totally different things. If you talk about equality, people can make an argument about, you know, we have equal rights in America, and they can make a really good argument for that. Now, there's a lot of things that are skewed. You talked about the criminal justice system, the education system, things of that nature. But you cannot argue that when you talk about equity, especially when you're talking about economics equity. And so when I'm talking about the views, I'm saying on a larger scale and how people see America and how they see the dream and how they see the president and how they see equal rights in America. And then when they talk about equal rights, they're just talking about civil rights. They're not talking about, you know, those other things, right? They put it in a box and they define it really well. But when we talk about equality, we really should be talking about equity. And that's my position.
I can't say I disagree with you on that. I hear you loud and clear on that, and I think you're right. I think that's part of the conversation that we have to have, just like when we talk about race. You know, that's the beginning of it. That's not the end. And so when you talk about equality, you're really talking about equity. So once you start having that conversation, then you'll get to the next level of that. But we want to stay on the surface because the surface makes us feel better, and the surface is safe. But you don't really get to the root of the problem just dealing on the surface. So until you start going underneath stuff, we're just going to stay acting like all is well when we know all is not well. When we know that in this great country of ours, there are people that go to bed hungry every night because they don't have enough food, and yet our government is positioned itself to cut off food assistance for people that really need it. Our government has positioned itself to limit, you know, unemployment insurance for people that's been looking for jobs for years, although the current Congress ran on creation of jobs, and yet here we are 3 mm-hmm. years in, and they have yet to submit one jobs bill. So it's like, you know, how can we talk about A and not talk about B? So we have to talk about them because they go hand in hand. But I agree with you, though. It is about equity. And until we have that conversation, people are just say we've arrived, and some of us, you know, they'll blame it on somebody's lack of whatever that is. They wasn't motivated, or they had the same opportunity as I did. And maybe on the surface they did. They may have a greater learning disability than you that you don't know about and that they don't know about. You know, we have a lot of people who have gone through their whole lives not realizing that they had some sort of learning disability, and somebody just thought they were slow or lazy or dumb, when in fact they really, you know, had a problem. And so if we don't keep going all the way back to get to what's going on, then, you know, we'll continue to sit on the porch and drink our lemonade and say all is well in my neighborhood.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So I mentioned something that you said earlier about showing the entire picture or the entire scope of who Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was. And I bring that up because there's an article that talks about Oliver Stone biopic about Martin Luther King Jr. is not coming out anytime soon. And so he said problems occurred when the studio said to be lockstep with the MLK estate, which gave them the right to use his famous speeches, rejected a depiction showing that the slain civil rights icon engaged in extramarital affairs. So And basically, the MLK estate is saying, I don't want you showing my daddy in that light. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I struggle.
When you're talking about controlling the narrative, when you're talking about, you know, depicting certain peoples, when they write about their heroes, they leave all that stuff out too. So I'm asking it in that context. So what's wrong with them asking to leave it out?
There's been I don't necessarily know if I agree with that in the term of, as an absolute, because we know everything we thought we could know about John F. Kennedy with all the women he had. So that's not necessarily true. And the Kennedys in general, with all, you know, they had a lot of issues in that family. So I don't necessarily know if that's a true statement. However, I don't think that, I mean, there's been enough innuendo about it that you might want to set the record straight, you know, and let it tell the true story of what it was. Because it's not like we haven't heard that he had issues as it relates to women. He was a smoker. The whole infidelity stuff and his journey to being this man of God that he eventually became, I think that would be a lesson. I think people would learn from it that and we hear it all the time, that it's really not about where you start, it's where you finish, and that would be a good story. That would be a good inspirational story, I think, to young people who may have done some things that they're not very proud of. It didn't define him as a man, though. It didn't define his mission. It didn't take him off course. And so even when you find yourself in a situation that may not be, you know, you made the pastor preached about this today, you may find yourself on a road that you didn't intend to be on, but you can still make a decision while you're there to either keep going up that road or to turn around and go back to where you're going, or stay on that road and still make the best out of it. Because if it's there and you have to continue, then you figure out a way to make the best out of it. But you don't let it define you. I'm not defined by the bad decisions I've made, because I've made some. And so, you know, I'm not defined by those. They're just a part of who I am and my whole person. My whole person embodies all of what I've experienced in these 45 years. And so why not tell my story in its totality, and not just the martyred man, the visionary, the man with a dream. Tell the story about who I am and how I live. And because it's not going to take away from the fact that I was a good father, I was a good husband, I was a great preacher, I was a great organizer. You know, I was a great author. It's not going to take away from any of that. It's going to be what it is.
So, but first let me say, John F. Kennedy was not a reverend. And so pastors...
So that's your distinction, but you didn't say that at first.
I'm just saying, you mentioned how people are held, and I say that in this context. I say that John F. Kennedy was not a reverend, and so Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King is going to be held at a higher standard, A, and B, when that comes out, the narrative will become all about just that. He will be marginalized to just that particular component. And there's evidence of the narrative changing when something comes out like that. For example, slavery. When you talk about Texas taking slavery out of the books in schools, and so there's no mention of it anymore, so it pretty much wiping it out. When you talk about someone like Michelle Bachmann saying to how good slavery was, and you hear recently Doug Dynasty talking about he don't remember anybody having any disharmony associated with those type of activities. And so as they begin to control the narrative and rewrite history, who's to say that when something is written like this, and especially on the silver screen, has the potential to reach millions of people, that they won't begin to control the narrative and then rewrite who the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was?
Okay, so here's the problem with that, is that this isn't the first story. I mean, this isn't the only story out there about him. You can go on YouTube right now and find a story about Dr. King if you just want to know who he was as a preacher. So there is not is about his life. You know what you already know about him. So What would this biopic do that was different than what we've already seen before?
You know, that Oliver Stone has a higher standard when it comes to portraying a person's life. I mean, he is known to be pretty accurate. So, as opposed to a YouTube video being used as a attribution, Oliver Stone would probably be used as attribution and be taken in out of context in many cases by other people. But I'm just leaning in the MLK estates. Position when they say, I don't want you showing my dad in that light. And you know, and who knows, you know, what how it may change is the world's position on Martin Luther King if something like that is presented in such a way. And it's really about interpretation, right? You mentioned all the positive aspects of what could come out of this, but the negative could be 10, 12 times that.
Well, but the other part of that, and I know we got to get to the end of the segment. I know the other part of that, though, is that on the flip side of that, then you can't tell me he was more than just a dreamer, that he was radical and that he was this and he was that, because that's not what I've seen. So you can't tell me that and tell me to embrace all of him, but then you want me to embrace the all of him that you want me to embrace. So if I'm going to embrace all of him, I'm going to embrace all of him. The good, the bad, the ugly, the flaws, the pimples, the whatever it was about him that made him who he was. You can't tell me don't put him in the box of just being this man that had a dream and talked about, you know, the dream part of the speech and forget about the economic part of the speech and, you know, and let us get away with that for all these years. And now all of a sudden you want to start talking about other stuff, but you don't want me to talk about him as a man. Because as I stated, nothing that he did diminished who he was, and it did not diminish what he accomplished. So, I mean, I hear you, and I respect that, and I hear what Bernice and the siblings are having to say. I get that, but, you know, you can't have it both ways. Either you want me to know about your father and all what he did outside of, you know, the dream and standing on and his mountaintop speech. You want me to know more about him? You want me to know about how he got to the mountain? Because I need to know about how he got to the mountain.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. All right, we're up against the top of the hour break, and when we come back, we're going to have Justin Moore. He'll be joining us. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jamal. And Ask G-Ma says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my email.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Winter Johnston. The Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says Edward Snowden may have received help from the Russians. As NPR's Ader Peralta reports, these are some of the strongest allegations made against the former NSA contractor, who's currently in exile in Russia.
In an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Rogers says Snowden did not have the technical capability to steal the documents he leaked to the media. That raises questions, Rogers says, about whether he had help from Russia's security service, the FSB.
I believe there's a reason he ended up in the hands, the loving arms of an FSB agent in Moscow. I don't think that's a coincidence.
In interviews, Snowden has said that he got rid of any classified information before he flew to Moscow. When Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein was asked whether Snowden received help from Russia, she said, quote, he may well have. We don't know at this stage. Snowden has already been charged with espionage and theft. Ader Peralta, NPR News, Washington.
Tens of thousands of anti-government demonstrators have turned out in the streets in the Ukraine capital, defying new laws aimed at ending the ongoing protests. The violence broke out after President Viktor Yanukovych decided to freeze ties with the European Union and seek a huge bailout from Russia. Protesters are demanding for his resignation. U.S. and Afghan officials are presenting competing narratives of a military operation north of Kabul that resulted in civilian casualties. NPR's Sean Carberry reports.
U.S. military officials say that at the request of the local government, Afghan special forces led an operation to retake Taliban-held territory in Parwan province. Militants hiding in houses ambushed the Afghan forces and U.S. advisors, killing one Afghan and one American. An Afghan commander called for U.S. air support. American officials say the aerial gunfire killed a number of militants and also two children who were in one of the houses from which the militants were firing. President Karzai characterized the incident as the bombing of a residential area and says he will not sign a security agreement with the U.S. until it ceases all operations targeting Afghan homes. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
The head of the investigation into the George Washington bridge scandal says there's no evidence linking Governor Chris Christie to the alleged plot. But New Jersey Assemblyman John Wisniewski told NBC's Meet the Press that Christie should have been more aware of what was happening.
With all of his senior people in the midst of a re-election year, it's hard to believe that he knew nothing until January 8th.
Christie's high-level aides are known to have directed the bridge traffic jam and cover-up out of political spite. 20 subpoenas have been issued to key members of the administration. A wildfire near Los Angeles is now 78% contained, and officials say evacuation orders have been lifted. This is NPR News. This year's Super Bowl contenders will be decided today. Right now, the Denver Broncos are leading the New England Patriots 20-3 in the third quarter. The teams are vying for the AFC Championship. Women's World number one tennis player Serena Williams has suffered a surprise fourth-round defeat at the Australian Open. As Stuart Cohen reports, Williams was trying for a record sixth Australian title.
Serena Williams admitted she wasn't quite herself right from the start, struggling with back pain in her fourth-round match against Serbia's Ana Ivanovic. Despite a strong first-set victory, Williams faltered midway through the second, and then Ivanovic took command, winning the deciding third set 6-3. The defeat ends Williams' quest this year for a record sixth Aussie title, but she's taking it in stride.
I'm always disappointed when I lose, but it's always a good thing because I plan on getting a lot better, and I think it's almost good that I lost today because now I know what to work on.
The defeat leaves Sloane Stephens as the only American singles player left. She goes up against returning champion and world number two, Victoria Azarenka, on Monday. For NPR News, I'm Stuart Cohen in Melbourne.
The head of the American Postal Workers Union says a deal between the U.S. Postal Service and Staples is a direct assault on their jobs. The Postal Service is opening retail centers in dozens of Staples stores around the country. They say it's a pilot program aimed at serving customers and driving up demand. Labor officials are criticizing the move because the outlets are staffed by Staples employees, not unionized postal workers. I'm Winsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I'm so excited to have Justin Moore joining us today. And now when he's asked where did his love for music evolve, Justin Moore comment, "My beginning introductions to music were brought about by my parents and their broad interests among a slew of different genres." I would like to welcome all to Justin Moore. Justin Moore, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you, Pat. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Oh, man, it is just glad to have you with us. How's it going today?
Everything's good, man. Everything's great. Everything's good. Just hanging out. It's a beautiful day in Dallas.
Yes, indeed. So I want to play a little of your music, and I want you to kind of talk to me a little bit about the background, you know, how'd you come to participate in and things of that nature. And I want all the listening audience to tune in to this because this is some really exciting stuff here. You know, I was able to listen to the songs, and I really just fell in love with it, man. So I'm really excited that you're doing this work. Take a listen.
She was a regular girl, they got tied up in my world. I'm somewhere fly, smooth in the club, we fuck with Gerald. We like the thick, light rice with the curls. I always had a way with the girls, always had a plan B. But I lost my girl, tryna play an OG. Reckless with the cheese, bartenders know me. Triple tapping, ignore when I'm with Shorty. Banana skies and cocoa heels, God gift of the heavens, denim and diamond in Manolo heels. Something a little different from the nickel and the dime holes. Unconditional love, mission of a dying folk. Take the good with the bad, hit me in the sand. 2 week of people seeking the time that they had. And I said it before, I be him again. 2 peas in the cars, me and my best friend. But,
I don't know what's going on in my mind. I know I didn't really have the time.
Man, that is on fire, man. What is going on? So how long you been doing this?
Man, I've been doing music, man, for as far back as I can remember, man. I mean, I remember my dad having, like, vinyls. I got caught a couple times as a kid tearing up the vinyls. But I remember just hearing different music, you know, just from my dad and my mom. And they had different types of music that they were interested in, you know. My mom, like, one of my favorite all-time groups is Hall & Oates.
Oh, you know?
And
okay.
A lot of people look at me crazy when I say that, but, like, you know, as far as, like, just an overall knowledge of music, I got to credit mom and dad, you know. It just came natural for me, you know.
Wow. So now are you just into making music? Are you writing songs, or are you playing instruments? What kind of give us a flavor of what all the talents that you have?
All of the above, man. It's I produce music. Wow. You know, of course I sing. I play a little acoustic guitar. You know, anything that's got something to do with music, man. I mean, when I was still in Arkansas, we put together, you know, different little concerts where we bring, you know, people, local artists up, and, you know, just to try to get, you know, hear new things, you know, try to do things like that. But I mean, anything that's tied to music, man, you know, I'm involved totally. So.
Oh. So tell me a little bit about this song and how did it come about, and what did it take to put it together?
Well, I mean, everything was, I have my own studio. Everything was produced in-house. A good friend of mine from Arkansas, one of my producers, Chris McGee, he actually put the track together here at the house. And, you know, I did all the recording, all the mixing, everything like that. So, I mean, it was just, you know, please don't go. You know, a lot of guys, you know, I mean, I can speak for myself. I won't put everybody else out there. But, you know, we get in certain situations where we're like, you know, just vulnerable. You know, we try to be macho, try to do this and do that. But at the end of the day, you know, you lost a girl or a woman. That you know that you know it's your fault, and you know it's somebody that you owe, you know, close to your heart, then you know you kind of get stuck in that situation where it's like, man, you know, I don't even care, just please don't go. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of just, you know, just I think every beat or every track that I get or I make, I actually talk to the track. I'm like, you know, what are you saying to me? Like, you know, and you can hear different music speaks different things. You know, you may have something that's sad, something that's happy, something that's, you know, kind of melancholy in between. But that just kind of said that to me, and I did it. So that's normally how that's my circle. That's how I normally put things together. So
when, you know, obviously this is some really good stuff. How does people, you know, get in contact with you? How do they buy your music? And is it on iTunes, anything like that?
Well, not on iTunes. Actually, September 26th,
okay.
I'm gonna go ahead and I've been putting songs together for a couple of years now. And I'm finishing up my project. You know, so September 26th is the date for that this year. So,
wonderful!
Be looking for that. And, right. I mean, you can find me on Just the More at everything. I mean, at Just the More, Instagram, Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at Just the More. You can, you know, YouTube. You can, you know, put in at Just the More, and all of my music will pull up. It's JustAmor, no E. So it's JustAmor. So any of those avenues, you can find, you know, anything Just the More.
So, you know, I got to ask, man. I mean, that's a kind of a unique name, just like listening to Hall & Oates is very unique, just like your music style is very unique. So I got to ask, so what's the background? What's the backstory on Just the More?
The story, man, the actual story, actually a good friend of mine, Sean West, he does music. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas. Shout out to Sean West. But back in the day, I had a group. I was in a group. It was a five-piece, you know, harmony, man. We were nice, called Last Minute. And we were going through names for the group. And I don't know who, I think it was a majority vote. I don't know how we ended up with Last Minute. But one of the names that Sean threw out there was Just the More. And I heard him, like, wow, that's, you know, I like that. And I think I voted towards that. You know, it got shot down. We went on with the Last Minute. And, you know, years later after, you know, we, you know, that group broke up or, you know, just kind of did our own thing, you know, I thought about it and, you know, I mean, it just kind of just, it speaks volumes to me as far as what I want to relay in my music, what I want to say to people. You know, I want to say that love is not something that's, that should be, you know, take it for granted. It's I don't know. It's one of the most powerful words to me. So, you know, I just wanted to say, just love. I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you think about music, or you know, you pass the guy that's sitting on the side of the street. You know, I mean, show him some love. Give him, you know, give him something, even if you don't have much to spare. It's just how I feel about things, man. I try to live like that.
Oh man, that's awesome. So I want to play this other track right after the we're gonna take a quick break, but when we get back I want to talk a little bit more about what you got coming up in the future, and to kind of, you know, set us up on what you got coming up. All right.
Okay. All right, cool.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment with Just the More.
You are listening to Kanye Brings with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my evening.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And right now we're on with Justa Moore and the wonderful love sounds of Justa Moore. And so, Justa Moore, I want to ask you, obviously, again, really, really feeling your music. So what do you got coming up that we can, here in the Dallas area, across the world, can come out and check you out?
Coming up, it's going to be next month on the 16th. It's a Sunday at it's a spot in Plano, Texas. The spot is called, let me give me this. It's, oh my God. I can't think of the venue right now. It'll come to me in just a second. But it's going to be a huge show, man. I'm going to be opening up for Algebra Blessed. She is like one of the most, I don't even know the perfect word to even, kind of describe what she is to Neo Soul, right now. But Algebra Blessed, if I'm not mistaken, she's from Atlanta. But I'll be opening up for her. So that's going to be a real, real, real great show, man. I'm excited to see her, and I'm excited And the actual restaurant, man, that is going to be hosted at is called Smoking Racks.
Smoking Racks,
Plano, Texas. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. So February the 16th. Algebra Blessed will be performing live. Mm-hmm. Get your tickets early for discounted prices. Limited space at the Neo Soul event at Smoking Racks. And you're going to be opening for this act?
Yeah. I'll be opening. I'm really excited. It's going to be 7 o'clock. The doors open at 7. The show is going to start around 8 or so. Get your tickets early, man, because it's going to be a really, 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 really nice show, man. Actually, this this same venue hosted Eric Robeson, and I throw that out there to just say that that's one of my favorite or most, you know, influential artists to me of today. Eric Robeson is I don't know if y'all know him, but he's a soul artist. He pretty much carried his whole, you know, 10 years or 12 years. He's been in the game for quite a while, but his whole enterprise, or his whole business behind his music is ran by his family, you know. He didn't have a major distribution deal or anything like that before, you know, recently. So, yeah, shout out to E-Ro. If y'all don't know who Eric Robeson is, look him up. That's one of my one of my favorite, you know, artists. So,
wow,
just throwing that out there.
So awesome. So we need to get him on so we can listen to some of his music. So are you going to be is it going to be a solo act, or are you going to be playing with a group? How does it work?
No, I'm bringing a band up from Arkansas to play with me. They play with me in numerous shows. Onyx band is going to be playing with me there. We're going to do some original songs. We're going to do some covers. We're just going to warm everything up. We're going to warm the room up for Algebra. And, yeah, it's going to be real cool, man. If you're in the soul, even if you don't know who she is or who I am, if you're in the area, you're in Dallas, you're in anywhere, you know, DFW, man, come out. It's going to be that Sunday after Valentine's Day. So a nice little, you know, weekend cap, you know, for the couple. So,
yeah, we'll definitely be pumping it up, putting it out on our Facebook, putting it out on Twitter, and we'll definitely get the word out about you out there so we can come out and check you out. So speaking of checking you out, I want to play another song, and I want you to talk a little bit about this. So take a listen.
Don't love me just 'cause I love music. This is my heart, so don't abuse it. I'm not doing it for the fame. This here music's what keeps me sane. Doing it so the bass gonna make you move your head. Hopefully the kick and the drum will make you booty sink your legs. I'm talking about that good old neo, good old soul. Mommy, move your body sexual, right on time, perpetual. I just need you to let me know that you dig my groove.
All right, I got to say again, man, it is hot. So, obviously, it's a lot of love flavor going on in your music. Talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's something about, you know, just kind of, I don't know. I think kind of all music has, or, you know, most music has some kind of, you know, some form of feeling or sensuality or, you know, just kind of something that just renders, you know, people kind of incapable of not being attached. You know, it's just some kind of something. It's just about those sounds and how they're orchestrated together that just kind of, you know, that makes people move. And that just, when you talk about anything that provokes feeling, then, you know, that kind of ties all in. So, like, I just try to, man, I don't know. Like I said, I hear something in every song or every, you know, track, because normally, you know, I hear the music before I hear, you know, I do anything with the song. A lot of times I do it that way. But I just hear it, and I try to make it, you know, make it become, you know, something in unison that's different. You know, I just try to put that love. I want you to move. I want you to feel it, you know, like I mispronounced filet.
So let me ask you this. When you look at most young artists these days, they're influenced more by hip-hop, by rapping, by a lot of profanity. But you have this unique, smooth, neo-soul kind of groove thing going on, which is refreshing, especially today, in today's society, when we have all of this, you know, go shoot your mama type music. So what stirred you in the direction, in this direction, as opposed to the other direction, when obviously we're all influenced by hip-hop, and we're all influenced right. by, you know, by rap, by Jay-Z and everybody else, but you seem to kind of move beyond that. How did you get beyond that?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I think first off, Patrick, you have to, you know, you have to respect, you know, every genre, because, you know, it opens up doors for people. You know, people definitely, become go different routes in life, you know, are able to open doors for people that, you know, however they came up and however they, you know, they actually, you know, want to speak what they're trying to say, you know, or trying to be heard in however capacity. But for me, it was just, it's just something about a Rhodes keyboard. It's the Rhodes is like the sexiest keyboard that, I don't know. Is it something about that, and something about, like, you know, something about hearing Jill Scott, you know, sing "Long Walk."
Oh,
or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or "Gold," you know, or watching "Love Jones," you know, and hearing, you know, the soundtrack for that, Michelle Indigo Cello, you know, the, I don't know. It's just, it's something about how it, you know, it's all tied in together, man. You know, and you know, people. You know, different people come from different things. You know, I got friends that have never heard of Hall & Oates. I mean, would never know, you know, who they were, or would never care to hear their music. But it's just about, you know, kind of like, you know, taking what you like and what you learn and where you come from, and you know, if you have the desire to put it out there and let people hear it. So that's what happened to me. So, you know, it's definitely something that I'm in love with. You know, nothing makes me happier besides my daughter and my son. But, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, so.
So when I hear your music, yeah, absolutely. When I hear your music, the first thing comes to mind is it's timeless, right? I mean, I can listen to your music today, and 20 years from now, I can still get it. You know, it's not kind of caught up in a fad type way. It's caught up in a classic traditional type way. Is it something you set out to do when you write your music, to make it a classic, instant classic, to make it timeless, or is it something that just kind of flows out of you?
Well, you know, a lot of things that are dated, a lot of music that's dated, you know, kind of goes along with the times. I mean, rappers, you know, they talk about things that's happening. So that's why, you know, things, you know, are a lot of times, you know, music, a lot of music is going to be dated, because it's so, you know, it's mass produced. It's, you know, it, you know, everybody loves it, and then, you know, everybody doesn't. It's just, it kind of, you know, fades away. But, yeah, it's my ideal. You know, every time I step in front of my microphone, you know, or I'm on the guitar trying to, you know, come up with a new melody, or I may be living a situation and you know, I want to put that out there in music. You know, every time that happens, and the idea is to make, to help somebody through whatever situation they're going through, you know, through the music, or, you know, or just to make them smile or make them feel good, you know. It's just, you know, music is kind of like water. It's like a universal solvent, you know, and people... I mean, yeah, people, you know, people can have the worst day. I mean, anything can happen. You know, you could be going through the lowest point of your life. If you turn on, you know, some Al Green, or, you know, I don't know, like Earth, Wind, and Fire, and, I mean, it, suddenly everything's okay, you know? So, yeah, I want to make everything that I have, everything I touch, I want it to be timeless, not dated.
You know, what's interesting is that when I look at the influences that you have, you mentioned Michael Franks, Frank Sinatra, Confunction, Hall & Oates, Patti LaBelle, Diana Ross, all of those people have that type of timeless music. What influence did they have on your style in either writing or playing or singing?
Well, you know, like I don't know, just the smoothness, man, the smoothness of Hall & Oates, and how, you know, you listen, you if you were to play a Hall & Oates song, and I don't know if y'all, everybody that's listening knows who Hall & Oates is, but I, you know, the song, one of their most popular songs is, you know, Rich Girl, and then Sarah Smile. You know, you listen to the song and you don't know it's just two white guys, you know, from, you know, wherever they're from, like, singing it. It sounds like, you know, like, you know, two, you know, I don't know, it sounds like the Ozzy Brothers or something. It's like so smooth, so, you know, just a melancholy sound, and they have just a smooth sound, kind of like a modern day like Dwele or, you know, somebody like that. So I mean, that was definitely influenced, man. You know, Kenny G, just listening to, you know, how Kenny G would, you know, through his saxophone, you know, take a song that's already been made, already been, you know, popular, and then, you know, remake it in with this sax, and it's so much sexier than it was, than the real song was. So it was something about making it smooth, making it you know, something that you can, you know, not really dance to, like, to, you know, it's not like a orchestrated dance, it's not like a, you know, a electric slide, it's just like a, you know, I have to, I want to move just a little bit, though, you know, just, I want to be,
right.
You know, I just want to just chill, it's that chill music, you know, that Moscato music, you know.
Yes, so, yes, indeed.
So,
you know, when you have a person that's talented like you are, you know, quite naturally you discover this early on, at an early age. So how young were you when you kind of first knew it, or your parents first knew you had it?
Well, man, like coming up through elementary school, man, I started in all the plays, and my music teacher, Ms. Ware, she gave me so much of my confidence, like on stage. And I tell people all the time, they're like, you know, how do you get up and you do, you know, you perform in front of people? You know, I couldn't do that. And I'm like, I'm more comfortable, not that I'm not comfortable sitting here talking to whoever, but I'm more comfortable, you know, on stage. And, you know, that she gave me that confidence. She would tell me, you know, sing from your chest, you know, and you know, she just, you know, instilled that in me, that there's nothing that you have a talent, and that you have to, you know, get up there. When you get up there, you're deciding to put on a show. You know, you're on the stage, and that's what stages are for. So when you're on that stage, you do what you're supposed to do. And, you know, that kind of like just laid the foundation for how, you know, how my will to just, you know, do music and to be in front of people and to entertain. That's where it came from, you know. So
when you look at what you do and what your band does and the sound that comes out, and, you know, and something I could just take right away and just listen to, it seems like it's very easy to do. But under the surface, you know, it has to be very complicated, complex, you know, a mundane process. So for someone like me that's really not all that musically inclined, and when I hear the end product, I was like, wow. But what really goes in to making the end product as good as it is?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're talking about, you know, just, you know, I mean, to explain it, it's just that, I don't know. I think it's, I mean, you would have to just, you know, look towards nowhere else but divine intervention. I was put here to do this thing. So, you know, I mean, to the whole process is it's the most fun. It's the thing that I do that's the most fun. You know, people that, you know, can't go a day without being in the gym, or can't go a day without, you know, being around their kid, or teachers are a prime example. You know, they're like, you know, they want to be around, you know, they want to teach kids how to, you know, how to do whatever to create right. The next generation of people. So, you know, this just what my purpose was, you know, what my purpose is. And so, you know, that, you know, that's one thing that, you know, you have to find out for yourself. Everybody has a purpose, you know, and whatever that may be, you know, just you know, ride with it, you know, don't fight it. Do what you're set here to do. And, you know, I think everybody will find out, you know, sometime at some point in their life, and that's, you know, and that's when you should, when you do find out, you got to just, you know, run after it. You got to sprint towards that goal, you know, so.
No doubt.
That's pretty much,
so,
yeah.
So what advice would you give someone then that is, you know, is struggling with the decision of, you know, stepping into their purpose and saying, man, I really want to do this, but I don't know. I mean, have you been in chances where you were challenged to, you know, to continue doing your work, or, you know, what advice would you give someone that's going through that kind of process?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be people that will not, you know, would not, you know, be behind you 100%. You know, some people, you know, you'll say you sing, I do music, I sing, and, you know, everybody does music these days. And I say, you know, no, I'm really good. And they're like, yeah, okay, cool. You know, it's just that, you know, not everybody's going to believe in your dream. And that there are dream killers. It's real. You know, the people that, you know, that will not, don't think it's tangible for you to be, you know, a singer or a rapper or a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, or whatever you want to be. You know, they don't think that you can do it. Nobody believe, you know, it's people that are out there that don't believe in you. But the thing is that you have to find that inner confidence. You have to find that little thing, that tipping point, that unicorn, you know, whatever it may be. You have to find that, and you have to just hold on to it and go, you know, regardless of what people say and what people do. And what may happen, you know, you got to just, you know, set a goal and write it down and place it everywhere, you know, put it all around. And, you know, when you instill it in your mind, you know, that this is what it is. This, you see it every day, you know, that's when it becomes real. And that's when your subconscious realizes that this is what I'm going to do subconsciously. You know, you're not even thinking something that you're doing, you know, not without even thinking about doing so. You know, just post your goals, make good goals, good attainable goals, and just do it, you know? So.
Yeah. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're on with Justa Moore, a wonderful, great artist, songwriter, musician. And the list goes on and on. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will have more of Justa Moore. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my...
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And we are listening to the sounds of Just a More. All right, Justin Moore, welcome back. So,
thank you.
It has been a pleasure having you on today. What are your final thoughts you want to give to the listening audience out here today?
Well, one thing I did want to mention, man, is about it's a fundraising thing that we're doing. One of my good friends, Christy Tucker. She's in Memphis. She put together a basically a fundraiser, and kind of the purpose is to sponsor a senior prom for young boys and young girls with disabilities and special needs. And you know, kind of the goal was kind of to, you know, make these children feel loved, special, important, and equal to every other, you know, child. And she just wanted to kind of, you know, highlight, you know, everything that, you know, highlight those kids, man, and make them feel special on that one night, you know. But Project Sparkle is just raising money to send those kids to prom in a major way. So you can go to it's a Facebook page for Project Sparkle if you look it up. And you can also, you know, if you follow me on Twitter at Justin Moore, or add me on Facebook, my Facebook fan page at Justin Moore. I'll be posting it. But Project Sparkle is something that you should definitely, you know, consider, you know, donating to, because it's for a great cause, and you know, it'll definitely, you know, make the night for a few young kids. And, you know, she's trying to do as many, you know, as many couples as she can, but you know, it just kind of all depends on the support. So. Check that out, Project Sparkle, and I'll be posting, you know, the link for that on my Twitter and everything else. So,
awesome. I'm looking it up right now. Project Sparkle, and you said there's a Facebook page for it, and also we can at least get more information from your Facebook page and on Twitter. Follow you on Twitter. You can find more information.
Right.
About it.
Yeah, okay. She set it working on a website. It's still under construction right now, but it's Project Sparkle, project-sparkle.org.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And a funding link can be found there too. You know, for the donations and stuff. So.
All righty. Well, that's awesome. Again, love having you on the show today, and we're certainly looking forward to the upcoming February 16th date, and as well as what's going on in September with you. We expect to have you back on. You tell us all about it.
All right, man. I appreciate you having me on, Patrick. Thanks a lot.
All right. My pleasure.
All right.
All right, Jima. You still with me, Jima?
I am still with you.
All right. That's an amazing young man. I am so glad he had an opportunity to clear his schedule and get with us today. I absolutely love his music. We're going to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to get out there and get it, listen to it when he comes out in September time frame, and also at his show coming up in February. So we're going to close up here today, and I wanted to make sure I got your final thoughts in, because you know I live for them.
Oh, well, my final thought today is yay to the Denver Broncos. Whoop, whoop, whoop. They beat down the New England Patriots, so I'm so excited about that. Yay, really, for Peyton Manning. It's not, I'm more of a Peyton Manning fan than I am a Bronco fan, but, you know, so I'll take that. Also, as you prepare for those that may have tomorrow off, as we've spent some time today talking about Dr. King and what he meant, and he was more than the speech, your day of service, you know, what do you plan to do to honor him? And not just him, but to honor any of those in our history that paved the way for us. On what will you do this year that you did not do last year? We talked last year about joining some civic organization, a local organization, or one that's local and has national ties as well. You know, what will you do to engage yourself in this process? And not just on politics in terms of national politics, but local things happening in your city council, even in your, if you didn't have a homeowners association, that's politics as well. You know, you see some things happening and you're wondering, well, why can that happen but this can't happen? So you have to be involved in that and engaged in that. And so you got to put yourself in those places to get your voice out and to make sure your voice is heard. And then I just challenge us as this is already the end of the first month of this new year. You know, what did you, you know, what kind of, I won't call them resolutions, but what did you say to yourself that you wanted to do, and have you started it yet? And if you haven't started, you know, what's holding you back? What are you afraid of? And I would just say write it down. You know, once we write things down, we can go back and look at it. Or, you know, for you technological people, you can, you know, write on your iPad or somewhere. But I'm still a paper and pen kind of girl, so I like to write my stuff out. And so write it down about, you know, and do it in small increments. You know, give yourself where you want to see yourself in 90 days. And then, you know, then after, you know, you've done that, then the next 90, you know, give yourself some short-term goals so you can ensure that you're going to have some success during this process. So that's my final thought, is that wherever we are today, that we plan for how we want to be better at what we do. If it's taking a class, if it's getting a certification, if it's if there is a book out there that you've always wanted to read and you just never found the time to do it, or you have a book in you that you want to write. The first book, whatever the book is, it has to start with one word. So what's your words for the day for your book? And so just encouraging you to do more and to look forward as opposed to always looking back, because there's not a whole lot we can do about what has happened, but we can do a lot about what will happen. And we can only do that if we're looking forward. So those are my final thoughts for today. And it's been a great show, great young man. I wish him nothing but success with his music. And I'm sure we will do more to encourage others here in the area to go and listen, as well as contribute to that organization that he mentioned. I think it's a great cause. Anytime you can do something to help somebody outside of yourself, you know, that power that's greater than you, and for me, that's God. He's well pleased with that.
Well, that's our show for today. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in, and a special thanks to Justin Moore. And I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you to my co-host, Jima Hill Cook. You can follow her on Twitter, and that's at Ask Jima. That's A-S-K-J-E-M-A. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.